As Communist Party leaders are formulating their next five-year plan in Beijing, mayoral candidates in New York are hoping to win a four-year stint running one of the world's most influential cities. Zohran Mamdani, a democratic socialist, has a double-digit lead with less than 2 weeks until Election Day. Whomever the winning candidate chooses to carry out his vision will say a lot about his leadership approach and effectiveness. Today, we look at someone who could be a key member of the next mayor's team, Jessica Tisch, who took an unorthodox path to running the New York Police Department by first battling rats. It's Thursday, October 23rd. This is the Monitor Daily Podcast. Good morning. I'm Krista Case Bryant. First, our curation of news briefs from staff writers and wire services. Many of these are developing stories. Find the latest updates at csmonitor.com/newsbriefs. OpenAI launched a new artificial intelligence browser called Atlas. Instead of a web search, it can scan a user's files and anticipate what else users might want to know. And rather than merely displaying information, it uses data to accomplish tasks. The software could help OpenAI earn ad revenue from web search, but challenges remain. Still in the startup phase and losing money despite ChatGPT's success, OpenAI must compete with Google, which dominates search and is also transforming it with AI. Privacy concerns remain an issue. An ultramarathoner is running an extra mile for each day of the U.S. government shutdown. In his viral videos, Rob Perez, a content creator and Navy veteran based in Washington, D.C., talks viewers through a different aspect of the shutdown while he runs, such as how it affects federal workers. About 1.4 million government employees have been furloughed or are working without pay. On Wednesday, Mr. Perez ran 22 miles to mark the 22nd day of the shutdown. Also, lifelong pen pals finally met after more than four decades of letter writing. Clark Casey and Michelle Ann Ng from Newfoundland and Singapore, respectively, first corresponded in 1983 as children. They haven't stopped. At their first meeting in Canada, the besties sifted through decades of letters, laughing and reminiscing. The friendship will continue until we grow old together, Ms. Ng told CBC. Nothing's going to stop us from writing to each other. Now, today's Monitor Stories. As always, you can go to csmonitor.com for our latest news. The world's second largest economy, China, is deciding its economic strategy for the next 5 years, a decision with high global stakes. And Scott Tyson reports from Beijing for the Monitor. Pakistan's contentious relationship with the Afghan Taliban recently boiled over, complicating prospects for long-term security in the region. A fresh ceasefire could help the two sides lessen the tension. Contributor Hassan Ali reports from Islamabad for the Monitor. Many Venezuelans support U.S. military strikes against drug trafficking, hoping they could topple President Nicolas Maduro. But the challenges facing those seeking to reestablish democracy in Venezuela go much deeper. Contributor Mia Hi-Rice Dahl reports from Bogota, Colombia, for the Monitor. The context of why civil rights activists like Medgar Evers and Maceo Snipes were murdered has been lost in the current conversation about the Voting Rights Act of the Supreme Court. Ken Makin writes for the Monitor. New York Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch has won plaudits for modernizing the agency and rooting out corruption. But she and mayoral frontrunner Zohran Mamdani hold different views about the causes of violent crime and how to address it. Contributor Aaron Short reports from New York for the Monitor. Russia has targeted sites in Ukraine holding culturally significant artworks, either through bombings or looting. As the war drags on, conservators feel a heightened sense of urgency. Contributor Kang Chun Cheng reports from Kyiv, Ukraine, for The Monitor. To view this photo essay in full, visit csmonitor.com/daily. Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on depolarizing America the local way. More than 3 weeks into the federal government shutdown, Democratic and Republican leaders still refuse to talk to each other about how to end it. That impasse is reflected in a recent poll that found 2 out of 3 Americans do not trust the U.S. political system to solve the country's divisions. Despite that popular view, many people are still finding ways to work together, exercising local agency to address pressing community issues. One example is the case of Three Rivers, Michigan, where Monitor staff writer Scott Baldoff found that shared concerns over contaminated water are helping to dissolve partisan distrust. Similar kitchen table pragmatism, as one source described it, is evident through much of small town and rural America. Now, several mainstream philanthropies are supporting such efforts with a hope of creating new civic models. Formed last year, the Trust for Civic Life charity has already awarded $17 million to 150 programs in rural communities and recently announced more grants. We have to be in the communities that are polarizing to support them, to understand what's happening and how they can be successful, Executive Director Charlie Brown told the site Inside Philanthropy. At the state level, others are working to bridge urban and rural divides, which mirror the growing partisan gap, even though most Americans share similar priorities on the economy, education, and healthcare. Even the environment is a mutual concern, but rural residents and farmers believe their economic concerns are disregarded by activists. Each year, Kentucky's Rural-Urban Exchange brings together about 60 residents to cultivate common ground. Such social infrastructure creates infrastructure for anything to happen, co-founder Savannah Barrett told the New York Times. But conversation can't be about conversion, she cautioned. For the American Exchange Project, it's about preventing polarization before it becomes entrenched by arranging youth exchange visits across the United States. The project's co-founder, David McCullough III, calls this experiential civics. Most high schoolers have not run into people who are different enough from them, Mr. McCullough wrote this week on the website The 74. As a result, the muscles that help them navigate nuance and connect with people who might disagree with them are unexercised. Since 2019, some 1,500 students have joined in more than 200 exchanges, venturing from Silicon Valley to Kansas to the East Coast. Ultimately, joint action in local settings helps build feelings of agency, social trust, and belonging, a study by the Trust for Civic Life confirmed. Working on shared priorities, rather than talking politics, is the best reference point. Community opens the door, but politics can close it. The stories you just heard are from today's newsletter. Find these stories and more at csmonitor.com. For more Monitor podcasts, go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. For other audio offerings from our parent organization, go to christianscience.com/audio. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how getting to know life as God replaces symptoms of depression with healing, joy, and hope. Find the full column at csmonitor.com/csperspective. Thanks to today's audio production team, Tim Malone and Mackenzie Farkas.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. Copyright 2025.